From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
As your governor, it's my duty to say that we all must take immediate and urgent action to slow the spread of the Delta variant. People are dying who don't have to die. It's heartbreaking, and it impacts us all. Given our current trajectory, we have a limited amount of time right now to stave off the highest peaks of this surge going into the fall. I had hoped that a state mask requirement in schools wouldn't be necessary, but it is. The Delta variant is highly transmissible, more so than any other previous forms of this virus.
Well, it's Governor J.B. Pritzker. This week, he announced a mask mandate for schools, and he also announced that some frontline state workers will be required to be vaccinated as of this fall. We'll talk about the reaction to that, and also the energy package that's been stalled in the state legislature. Can it make any progress? We'll find out. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Charlie Wheeler, still on his summer vacation this week. Our panel includes Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House editor. Joining us, we have Steve Daniels. He is the senior reporter for Crane Chicago Business. And Steve, thanks for being with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Also, we have Amanda Vinicky, reporter for WTTW's Chicago Tonight. And Amanda, always good to talk with you.
Same with you, Sean.
Well, let's get started on this mask mandate that the governor put in place this week. Last week, Hannah, we talked about this, what I'd call a patchwork of rules that was starting to develop across the state, different districts coming up with, in some cases, requiring masks, in other cases, making them optional. The governor, I guess, getting everybody on the same page, was that the plan for this week?
I mean, yeah, you know, we had a summer full of contentious school board meetings. You know, will districts require masking? Will they not? We had districts coming up with all different types of answers. You know, yes for this age group, no for this age group. You know, masking completely optional, masks required. But as the more virulent Delta variant of COVID keeps spreading, and we're seeing, you know, from evidence from other states, Florida and Arkansas in particular, that children are actually, you know, they're getting infected, and not just infected, but hospitalized. This is the decision that the governor made, and he said he had no choice in the matter. But it, you know, it does put an end to the debate. You know, at least not in theory. Obviously, the emotions are going to keep raging over it. But this way, you know, he can take the arrows and local school board members and legislators don't have to make that decision.
Yeah, Amanda, he says he's following CDC guidance, but that guidance came out several days before. It took them a while to come around to saying, oh yeah, we're going to, you know, require masks once again, at least at the start of school. Why wait? What was the, you know, do we have any idea why it took several days for the state to make this call?
No, we don't really have any good answers to that, Sean, other than my guess would be that this is very contentious, as you can see in some of these local school board meetings where debates about it and cases, I believe, literally came to blows. That this is a governor who, of course, is facing re-election, knows that a lot of people are over this. I think everyone is. And so that's my suspicion. And of course, also, you don't have school happening right away. And so for the most part, there is time yet before you're going to have classrooms with children and students in them. The governor really, when asked about it, said that he had hoped that he wouldn't have to come to this decision, that he basically scolded districts that decided against mandates themselves, saying that he'd hoped that statewide action wouldn't be necessary.
Yeah, Steve, I think that was kind of an odd statement to me. I'm sure he feels that way. At the same time, these locals in, you know, many parts of the state, especially in many downstate areas, but also in some suburban communities, they're also, like Han had mentioned earlier, taking some of these arrows, and they're trying to, you know, make the right call, but they're also having to listen to parents and many people in their communities. It seems as though they're probably pleased that the governor just decided, hey, here's the blanket policy for the state.
Yeah, I think this is the right person to be making this kind of decision instead of, doing it locality by locality or district by district. It really is, obviously there's a lot of emotion regarding masking, regarding vaccinations, but the science of it and what we're actually seeing in terms of transmission of the disease, those are facts. Those aren't something that people can argue, at least not legitimately, about. So, it's a very easily, I think, justifiable decision. And, that's the governor's job. He's the top official in the state, and it's probably the right person to be doing this.
Hannah, I don't want to pick on the governor or anyone else when it comes to this, but it does seem as though it adds to the confusion, because we're talking just 2-3 weeks ago, and I know things have changed. The numbers are looking different. We know more about this variant and how it spreads, and that vaccinated people can apparently spread it. But at the same time, the governor was very clear several times when asked about it in July that the decision needs to be made at the local level. Now he's come around and made a different choice.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. It does, it leaves those who want to criticize the governor with more potential fodder, in the political landscape. People are punished for so-called flip-flopping, but, things have changed. Initial decisions back in early July were made from this CDC, the initial CDC guidance, which said that, only unvaccinated folks needed to be masked. And it was, again, just recommendations. But since then, the Delta variant has made a lot of headway, around the nation, in Illinois too. And so this new CDC guidance came out. But yeah, I mean, it does add, more for folks who want to throw arrows at the governor, throw arrows at mandates in general. But, I would also add, though, that those anti-masking folks, those who show up to school district meetings ready to throw down, they're very vocal, they're very loud, but they are actually the minority. A recent poll showed that even in Florida, it was about, a third of people were against mask mandates in schools, but the vast majority were actually for.
Well, Amanda, the governor making this decision this week, of course, was met with, as expected, some criticism from Republicans, have already announced that they plan to run for governor next year. Now, that field may not be complete at this point, but it's already clear to see the divide that we're going to be hearing about as we get closer to next year's election.
Oh, yeah, very much so. First, the people most vociferous in their frustrations with the school mask mandate were those that are hoping to run against Pritzker in next year's election. And you have so far, as you noted, unclear whether this field will expand. But right now, you have three candidates in Paul Schimpf, Darren Bailey, and Gary Rabine, all of whom are were against this, and they cast it as another way of the governor taking control, number one, calling him a tyrant. And then also in some of the statements couched with some sketchy claims, trying to rebut science that shows the impact of masking, also trying to say things like, schools aren't sources of outbreaks and children don't get COVID and don't get really sick from it, even though we do have data from the Illinois Department of Public Health that shows, unfortunately, that youth are being more impacted by this strain of COVID than earlier versions.
Now, I'm in central Illinois, but Steve, you're in northern Illinois in the Chicago area, and is it, I know what I'm hearing around these areas, and I don't think a lot of people still are taking the virus all that seriously, even after what we've been through. Does Chicago seem to be different?
Yeah. I will say this, and this is more anecdotal than anything else, just living here. you know, in last year, during before the vaccinations were available, the masking was almost universal in Chicago. It was really, I thought in general, people took it very seriously and responded accordingly. Now with the Delta variant, I would say that I see more masks on, say inside stores and things like that. Certainly, and this is really recent, like in the last week. But still plenty of folks just maskless inside. We also should mention, I suppose, the teachers union wanting to negotiate all of this with Mayor Lightfoot in terms of the conditions for returning to school over and above the, you know, masking issues. And really vaccinations are more of a lightning rod, whether they're required or other various sticks versus carrots used in terms of getting more people to get vaccinated than I think the masking issue is.
And that's a good point, Hannah. This week, the governor kind of stepped into that as well. He basically, along with the mask mandate for schools, he also talked about some frontline state workers, those who work in places like prisons, veterans homes, developmental centers, that they need to be vaccinated. I think he gave them till October to be fully vaccinated. What are you hearing about that? What's been the reaction?
That's right. You know, it's like you said, frontline state workers, those who are, you know, could potentially bring the virus into these places where people don't really have the freedom to move around. They live there for a reason. But it's, you know, the governor cited low vaccination rates among staff versus, you know, relatively high vaccination rates among, you know, folks who live in these congregate settings. For example, he cited, you know, veterans homes with 90 something at one apparently has 100% vaccination rate among residents compared with, you know, kind of abysmally low vaccination rates. And he said, it's a breach, quote, it's a breach of safety. It's fundamentally wrong. And in Illinois, it's going to stop. AFSCME, which is, of course, the largest public employee union in Illinois that represents a lot of these folks, they did not take to that too kindly. Roberta Lynch, the council, 31 council president, said, we strongly oppose any effort to define them, state workers, as part of the problem rather than recognizing their dedication and vitally important contributions. You know, it is hard. It is hard to, try to make a statement that kind of demonizes your own employees, those who, by the way, are your political allies. But, you know, I think the governor made the calculation here that it had to be done. And, you know, a lot of these facilities are in places around the state where there are, you know, low vaccination rates among the community too. And, you know, perhaps if there is a mandate and folks, you know, go ahead and get it before that October 4th deadline, you know, maybe it'll inspire others in the community to say like, oh, my neighbor who works at the prison, you know, they had to get the vaccine and you know what? It wasn't that bad. And it looks like they're protected. So, you know, maybe that'll happen or maybe there'll be a huge backlash. But it does seem like, you know, despite that statement from AFSCME, you know, they are willing to at least negotiate it.
Yeah, Amanda.
Yeah, I was going to say, but to me, this is a big if. I'm no labor attorney. Who knows how this could pan out? But it asks me, as Hannah read in that quote, certainly not happy about this. By the way, the state giving some of the statistics in terms of the number of vaccinated employees at some of these congregate setting state facilities, 53%. So at the Department of Human Services, developmental centers and psychiatric hospitals have received the vaccine. And then in prisons, it's less than half, only 40% of correctional officers, so guards and other staff at DOC facilities have received the vaccine this far. And then at Veterans Home, it's 64%. Again, that's in contrast to nearly 100% of the residents of Veterans Homes. So whether even the threat of this will increase the number of employees, how this will be bargained, you also, by the way, have Secretary of State Jesse White saying that people who work in driver's facilities will also need to be vaccinated, and it's not as strong a mandate. If they're not vaccinated, they'll have to be tested for COVID once every couple of weeks. And again, backlash there. I know the Fraternal Order of Police, for example, saying that they don't believe that this is required, talking about dangerous and a denial of constitutional rights of a targeted group of citizens. This is a lodge, the correctional, the union, by the way, that represents the correctional officers working at DOC facilities. So this is, to me, very interesting because, of course, for his coming into office before he became Governor J.B. Pritzker, he ascended to this position very much with the help of labor. And this is picking a battle with unions very clearly, openly.
Well, you're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Hannah Meisel, Steve Daniels of Crane Chicago Business, and Amanda Vinicky with Chicago Tonight on WTTW. Well, let's switch gears. And of course, we've been talking about unions, and unions are also playing a key role when it comes to energy legislation, a big energy package that has really been stalled at the Capitol for months now. Steve, I feel like I've been talking about this for a long time. You've been following it closely. First up, talk to us about what is in this package, or at least what the goal of it is.
Yeah, the goal of it is to make Illinois' power generation sector carbon-free in terms of its emissions within 25 years. And to do that over time, you know, to scale those emissions down over time through a whole series of different things, different measures, but that's the overarching goal.
So where does organized labor fit in this? What is their big concern with this package?
The question is, where don't they fit into this? Because essentially, they have taken upon, and they is a very there's plenty of unions that are at odds with each other too. So they're not some giant entity, but they've taken over the traditional role that ComEd and Exelon have played in this when the state has taken major energy measures in being sort of the 800 pound gorilla. The unions are that this time around in some cases as a proxy for the companies. So essentially what various unions are, there are unions that represent nuclear plant workers of Exelon. Exelon got in the bill that's been stalled, got what they wanted and said they would keep open two plants that otherwise they were going to close this coming fall. But there's a whole slew of unions that represent fossil fuel plants and a few in particular that have really balked at the idea of a specific shutdown date for those plants, especially if those plants have taken some sort of steps to clean up their act. And right now, environmentalists basically have said, hey, well, if we're just going to keep fossil fuel plants open as long as they want to stay open, this isn't a climate bill. And there's no point in all of the extra charges that ratepayers are going to face to make all of this happen, and they will be substantial. There's no point in doing that if we're not even going to get a climate bill. Governor Pritzker agrees with them. Senate President Harmon is much more in tune with the union concerns, and that's why we're at.
Yeah, Hannah, the governor he's not shied away in recent days, saying he wants to move this forward.
That's right. You know, the governor is both in a response letter to organized labor on Monday and in a news conference responding to Amanda's question, actually, on Wednesday, he was unequivocal in saying, you know, we've already negotiated, we've already compromised, and this is the deal that, you know, I'm urging lawmakers to move forward. The problem with that is they don't have the votes. The governor's office and environmental groups, they don't have the votes for this. And so, you know, okay, you want to go to Springfield for a special session, put it on the board, see it fail. You know, then what? That, obviously, that is a you know, something that's been done before will be done again. But, you know, we are running up against this really tight timeline.
It would be tough to pass something like this anyway, because there's a lot of moving parts to get it all together. But Amanda, in some ways, is this where the loss, or not at least having Michael Madigan, somebody with that type of experience in place, slows this down?
Sean, I have been hearing that. It's sort of a be careful what you wish for with his demise for some parties here, whether it be because just his particular skill set. The reason that he was the speaker for so many years was because he knew how to do politics. That's not just getting people elected, but how to massage through things like this. Obviously, while he has denied any part of wrongdoing, Madigan is the official who apparently was the target of bribery by ComEd executives as they were pushing through previous incarnation of one of these, you know, bailouts or nuclear plant lift-ups in terms of the FEJA Act that is currently in place. Don't think we could talk about Madigan without, of course, mentioning that. But most certainly, you have that. You have a contention, it seems, between the governor's office and State Senate President Don Harmon that is simmering here. You have a new speaker, so not only no Madigan, but also sort of learning the levers here. And then these are also, I think it's difficult because Democrats control, obviously, all of state government here, not that this energy issue is a particularly partisan one, and you have these nuclear plants in districts represented by Republicans. But what makes this particularly difficult is environmentalists and labor are the traditional allies of Democrats. And so it's not as easy for Democrats to just push something through. I'm going to be very keen to see where this goes without a Madigan, without anybody calling the shots, because it seems like the governor, as Hannah noted a bit ago, has really dug in his heels saying, this is our best offer, without leaving any more room for negotiations, when it has been apparent for months that legislators are not going to go for that offer.
Steve, you mentioned some of the practical reasons earlier that this is stalled, but how much of it is personality?
I think some of it is, and how much of it is really hard to say, because again, like Amanda just said, a lot of that's been simmering kind of behind the scenes, but I don't think most of it is. I think what is needed, and I wrote about this in a story that published this morning, but is simply for legislators to legislate. Basically what the Senate president did at the end of May when some of these union issues came up, because you might recall, this bill was all set to go. It had the votes in the House, and then this stuff popped up at the last second in the Senate. Essentially, what he did was he told the environmentalists and the unions, hey, go work this out and come back to us when you got a deal. Not only do they not have a deal, they're farther apart than they were at the end of May. People have actually moved in opposite directions. What this requires is basically and this is what the Senate is doing right now, they're going to come up with a proposed compromise at some point in the next week or two to try to resolve all of this themselves. Basically say, okay, you couldn't do it, so we're going to have to do it. We're going to have to be the adults. Well, they waited for 2 months to do that, and now they're really up against it. So I think it's fair to call this a legislative a failure, I think, to this stage. And now they're really going to have to rescue this out of the sort of frying pan. I mean, that's where they put themselves.
We keep hearing all this money being talked about in Washington, different packages, infrastructure, things like that. Would there be possible money there for Exelon coming from the federal government?
Yes, but in fact, in the infrastructure bill that the Republicans negotiated with Democrats, there's $6 billion for nuclear bailouts around the country. But Exelon says the way they've structured it doesn't work for them, and it wouldn't save the Byron and Dresden nuclear plants. The details of why that is, I don't have time to get into. What they want is a production tax credit. That would resolve their issues. But if that shows up in any piece of legislation, it's going to be in the reconciliation bill, the much bigger one that Democrats will pass with only Democratic votes, if they in fact do later on this year. And that won't be in time for Byron and Dresden.
Okay, just less than a minute left here. Amanda, I thought I was having a flashback this week. I saw Rod Blagojevich in front of the Dirksen Federal Building in Chicago, former governor, impeached governor, and convicted. What was he doing there? What's this all about?
He said that the process of getting impeached was too political. By the way, of course, being impeached and removed from office is, by its very nature, a political process. And he was back in court this time. Yes, there were cameras there, but nowhere near as many. He's representing himself, despite his tales of being a very bad law student and attorney. He's going to be representing himself, seeking to get overturned the restriction that bans him from running for local or state office again in Illinois. Says that he's not necessarily eyeing any particular job, but that he is not closed off to the option if the courts agree with him. By the way, very uphill battle, likely not going to happen.
All right, it's time now for our notes from the field. And Hannah, let's go to you first.
Sure. Another blast from the past this week. Kirk Dillard, a former Republican state senator, reportedly seeking, the possibility of running for governor. And he ran in 2010, ran in 2014, and just, came up short in the Republican primaries. You know, it's interesting because, he's always been the moderate. He doesn't mind that label, but the world has changed since then. So it'll be really interesting to see if there is any appetite from Republican leadership, because, they do have to face the fact that the strategies that they've been employing over the last several years just have not been working for their party.
All right, Steve.
Yeah, well, on the energy front, while, state senators and the governor and lawmakers, squabble over these various provisions and things that they want to be able to have government do, to have government influence the market. The market's got its own things going on that are going to complicate that effort. And the biggest thing is a doubling since a year ago of natural gas prices. Natural gas essentially is the key fuel, both for the setting of electricity prices in Illinois, and obviously we heat, unless we live in rural areas, we heat our homes with natural gas too. This whole process through COVID, through the pandemic, has really shown how difficult it is for lower income people to afford their utility bills. The bill that stalled that we just talked about would substantially hike utility bills even more to make all of these various green power dreams come true. And right now, regardless of whether anything happens about any of those things, people's utility bills are going to go up just simply because of the market.
And Amanda.
Well, we know that Rod Blagojevich got early released from prison thanks to a commutation from former President Donald Trump. But we also have the Rita release. Rita Cronwell, who is embezzled more than $50 million from the town of Dixon, spent some of that money on 400 horses, as you might have seen in the documentary All the Queen's Horses. She was released early from federal prison in Pekin. Why? We don't know, but apparently she is now residing in the Chicago suburbs at a halfway house.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Hannah Meisel, Steve Daniels with Crane Chicago Business, and Amanda Vinicky with WTTW's Chicago Tonight. Get a podcast of our show available at nprillinois.org through the NPR One app or through iTunes. And you can join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.